episode 11 of the Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. This episode is a recording of a January 2023 WordPress Accessibility Meetup where Anne-Meek Beauvallet shares some great strategies anyone could use to inspire developers and designers in their organizations to deliver accessible solutions. WordPress Accessibility Meetups take place via Zoom webinars twice a month and anyone can attend. For show notes and a full transcript and additional information about meetups, go to accessibilitycraft.com/011. And now, on to the show.
And now I am very excited to introduce our speaker. She gave me permission just to call her Anne Beauvallet, but Anne-Meek Beauvallet. She's a passionate multilingual accessibility and possibility advocate from Germany. She was born in 1971 in the Netherlands and in a long lineage of visual artists, sculptors, musicians, and nutty professors, which I love that there's a great background there. Anne built her first real website in 1998 and has freelanced on the side for years. And in 2008, she took the plunge as a full-time entrepreneur. She has really worked, I feel like, in focusing in inclusive design and content. She likes to debunk myths such as accessible websites are more expensive or you can't create really great designs if it's an accessible website. I've had the opportunity to hear her speak at a few different places, and I was super excited when she agreed to come and speak for us because I think she's going to share some really great information today. So welcome, Anne. I'm going to stop sharing my screen and I will let you take over sharing.
All right. Hello, everyone. It's really great to be here. I can't tell you how excited I am, how many people joined today, especially like what Amber said, after the holidays. Absolutely fantastic. I'm going to share my screen now. Okay, so I've been speaking for a lot of audiences, and actually this time I chose the topic to speak to team leads and future team leads of design and development teams in several companies. And it doesn't really matter whether you are working in a small company or a large company, or even if you are a freelancer who has to work together with others, which can be a lot of fun. Well, Amber already told a lot about me. I was born and raised in the Netherlands, and I'm smacking around with a lot of very Dutch expression. Someone told me your sayings are absolutely crazy, so I will try and explain them as much as I can. And one very important thing you need to know about me is that my parents taught me to think in possibilities. So I was practically raised not without fear, but I was taught that if you want something, don't start to think about how what can go wrong or what is bad or what is dangerous, but what do I have to do to get there? And these problems, we call them bears on the road. And my mother once said to me, you know, Anne, if you see a bear in the road, you got to hug it to death. Now, why is this so important? Because this is actually a very important trait in speaking and teaching about accessibility. Because for a lot of people, this is a really scary topic. I mean, I'm not telling you anything new by that. But this presentation is going to be about saying yes and not saying no. Now, a lot of people seem to think I've been in accessibility for many, 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 many years, which is not the case. I created my first website in 1998, and I felt really old when I realized that again. I started for myself in 2008, but it took me to 2021 to understand that I knew virtually nothing about online accessibility. And really, you need to take note of that because you are also running into designers and developers, content creators, people around you who have no clue what it means. My knowledge stopped at you need to have your heading order and you need to do good alt descriptions. So when I finally figured out that there's a lot more to it, I started to learn. And if you try to learn all this at once, it's very steep. It can be very discouraging. And again, that is what this presentation is about, to take away the discouragement, because that is what gives you counter arguments. So what you will learn today in the end is how you can motivate developers, how you can motivate designers, and how you can use that knowledge to motivate decision makers. I know some of you came here thinking, oh, I'm going to get all the selling arguments for customers to sell them accessible websites. But you will have to work for that. And what I'm showing you today and what we're discussing today is bringing you the ideas, the inspiration of how you can do that. Okay, so like I said, this is targeted at team leads and people leading people into creating accessible websites, apps, shops. And I'm assuming you already have a solid understanding of online accessibility, and you're the one who has to take the lead. I can be very confrontational. Maybe this has to do with the fact that I'm Dutch. I'm just very direct. I say some pretty graphic things every now and then. If I say something that offends you or anything, it's not personal. And please get back to me if there is something eating you about it, okay? A very important subject and part of this presentation is about psychology, because accessibility is a topic that stirs up a lot of emotion in so many regions, okay? Now, and the examples that I'm sharing are based on my experience in the past 1.5 years, where I literally work day and night to learn what I know now. And I still think I don't know the half of it, but that's the job. Anyway, but you may have other experiences that you have questions about. So at the end of the presentation, do not hesitate to ask, okay? Also, at the end of my presentation, you get to share your arguments, because the arguments that I run into or run into may not be the ones that you run into. And there is absolutely no remark too stupid. Okay, so feel free to bring on every argument. But again, remember, this is mainly about arguments between developers and designers and their team leads. If you profit from this by hearing things that you can take to your customers, this is great. But this is between the teams themselves. So what I would like to ask you is to make a list of a maximum of 3 arguments that you find really hard to counter. Okay, I would ask of you to do that now. And the reason is, if you do it now, I would like to know in the end of the presentation if you have been inspired by this and know a way that you figured out by yourself because of what I'm telling you of how you could counter it. And if you end up with arguments where you say, yeah, well, I can't counter this when they say this or they say that, what can I say? How can I motivate them? Go ahead. You get to ask your questions. You get to present your argument. Okay. So now, because I know that not everybody here is working as I'm targeting, I'm going to list a couple of things. Some of them may be stating the obvious to you. Some of them may not, but I just need to get everybody on the same page here. Okay. So when you first start talking to designers and developers, like, okay, we have to make stuff accessible. Whatever you are doing is not accessible. The first response, of course, is disbelief. They're like, it works for me. And I don't want to do age discrimination or anything, but I learned that it's very often the younger people who respond like this. And this is not only because when you're young, you still have all your faculties. Maybe you are one of the lucky people who does not have a disability, but also you fell into a lot of modern code frameworks. You're not one of those dinosaurs like I am. I am 51. who actually wrote code by hand. Another argument you get, well, why do we even have to bother with accessibility? We don't have disabled visitors, users, customers. Or people get mad. They go like, what? I've been doing this for so many years and no one ever complained. You're actually telling me that what I do isn't right? Are you saying I'm a bad designer? How dare you? Or, hey, the worst, guys. Ah, you know there's a plugin for that, right? I mean, I'm talking about those notorious overlay plugins. I'm not going to get into those plugins right now. I'm just going to say, note down overlayfactsheet.com. If you haven't heard of those before, read that. Okay. This is also something you can send your people out to read. Then you get a lot of resentment because people feel they are being restricted. You start talking about, well, it has to be accessible, so you cannot do this and you cannot do that and you cannot use that feature and you cannot use that tool. I mean, nobody likes to be told what he can't do. It goes against our psychology in general. There's little as decapacitating as no. It's very demotivating when you really are not sure if you're doing it right. And you come to your team leader and you say, look, I created this. And the team lead goes like, yeah, that sucks. Or you don't understand it. Or why didn't you read up? Or why didn't you? It's all no, did not, no. Be aware when you speak to your team and the people you work with of your language, are you speaking in what they cannot do? Or are you speaking in what they can do? I know I go Hulk on people who keep telling me what I cannot do. Then people start crawling back because of fear of repercussions. You know, I know more in the US than in Europe. The legal liability is pretty strong, also in Canada. I know there are companies doing hard sales based on that, but fear is the worst enemy of creativity there is. Have you ever created a fear design? I did. My website is an example of that. I mean, this was the safest design I could think of because I had to whip it out in a couple of weeks. I'm currently working on this new website and you have a premiere, actually, the logo on the top left. No one in the world has seen that yet. You do? It's going to be very colorful. But that aside, back to legal liability. People think we can get sued if it's not done right. And then you start crawling into yourself. So if you're working with a team who just got the assignment, listen, we got sued and we need to have an accessible website like yesterday and everything needs to be fixed. People are going to start to color between lines that are within lines. Again, they feel you cannot do this or you cannot do that, but it's about the possibilities. And it's up to you to counter this fear and worry and this. I would always almost call it a probably non-existent word in English. I would call it discreativity because people are afraid they get fired if they don't do it right. And then there's fear of the unknown. I mean, it's overwhelming. The documentation for accessibility is drier than the Sahara in midsummer. And for several reasons, even for me, I have this weird form of dyslexia. I have ADHD. I mean, give me a pile of text longer than 20 lines and I'm gone. And I think a lot of people who work in creative jobs, whether it's coding or designing, are people who tend to go into full focus on creation, and learning all this dry stuff is like It's drying up the well. And there's this other thing. We always try to be perfect. So we feel like we have to know and we have to understand all of it.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. A WordPress native tool, Accessibility Checker provides reports directly on the post-edit screen. Reports are comprehensive enough for an accessibility professional or developer, but easy enough for a content creator to understand. Accessibility Checker is an ideal tool to audit existing WordPress websites, find accessibility problems during new builds, or monitor accessibility and remind content creators of accessibility best practices on an ongoing basis. Scans run on your server, so there are no per-page fees or external API connections. GDPR and privacy compliant. Real-time accessibility scanning. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to a paid version of Accessibility Checker to scan custom post types and password-protected sites. View site-wide open issue reports and more. Download Accessibility Checker free today at equalizeddigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code AccessibilityCraft to save 10% on any paid plan.
I remember the day I pressed the button on my current website and I had 7 collars in my pants. Again, it's a very Dutch expression because I thought people are going to come and they're not going to shoot me down because they're like errors here and errors there. And probably this thing has errors because I was making this in a page builder. But at some point, you have to let go. You're doing your best. And it's for you to motivate your team into doing their best and into acknowledging that there is stuff that they don't know. It's okay to not know something. It is not okay to tell somebody to bugger off because you're trying to hide that you don't know something. And this is where all the counter arguments are coming from. Okay. So, like I said, we're going into a little bit of psychology, right? Everybody wants to be liked. Let me set that up. Everybody wants to be loved. Getting told that you are not doing it right, or giving someone the feeling like they are Bambi on ice. You know, I don't know who of you has seen or heard Bambi. Bambi was a reindeer and he tried to walk on ice and he was just squibbling all over the place. And again, some of you might wonder, why is she telling this? Of course, everybody here knows Bambi. Well, I can tell you not everybody knows Bambi. I know for a fact that a friend of mine is here. His name is Lazar, and Lazar is blind. I don't know if Lazar ever experienced Bambi, but I think Lazar experienced walking on ice. Well, so this is actually quite a good example of how you, as a team lead, guide your people into understanding that you know what they are going through. Okay. People identify with what they do for a living. And I think this goes especially for creative people. When you are creating stuff, when you are making stuff work, you are giving a part of yourself, of your soul. And if you give someone a feeling that they're not good or not good enough at what they do, that is detrimental. That is what gets them to shut down on you. And shutting down is not turning quiet. Shutting down is getting up front like, yeah, sure, you can automate that. Or can't they ask someone to navigate the site for them if someone can't use the site? It gets you all kind of no. When you give in a no, you get one out. Okay? So, the basis for countering voiced and unvoiced arguments is something a lot of people would say, oh, you're getting all psycho on me. You're getting all so spiritual. But, you know, fact is love and empathy. Everybody needs and wants love and empathy. Whether it is you designing a site or coding a site, or you doing that with your team, or you being the one on the receiving end. I'm on the receiving end a lot. I have ADHD on steroids. I can't focus for more than 5 minutes if it is a subject that doesn't really have my biggest passion at that moment. I can't see very well. So when text is small and gray and has bad contrast, I feel unseen. I feel there has been no empathy for me and my fellow users whatsoever from whoever designed that website. I get to feel like, oh my, they really don't care, do they? It's very important that you clarify to the people you work with the joy of what you can do, of what can be done, instead of what can't be done, because can't is unproductive. Okay? So now think back of all the arguments you people whoop around your ears. How many of these arguments can you already say, yeah, they're worried that they're not doing it right, or maybe I should have clarified that? Well, one of the most important things, I think, is in countering arguments, or maybe it's better to say not countering arguments, but to make sure people do not argue with you over certain things. I think that's better. Is making them understand the why. And your why is not my why. And my why is not my blind friend's why or my mother of 76 who tried to change banks and she could not. So the why. And this is why I said, I'm assuming you already know a lot about accessibility. Because if you understand accessible design and accessible coding, you could actually be a master of explaining why from a practical point, okay? Because saying, because I say so, it's not really a great argument. And of course, making things accessible, you should do it because it's the right thing to do. But if you work with a team of new developers, new designers, or the whole topic is new to them, it's not as solid as you think. Because people are having their center of the universe in here and in here. Okay? So if you just say to someone, yeah, it's the right thing to do, they still don't know why. If they cannot relate, they don't know why. If I tell them you have to make your text, your paragraph text, at least the equivalent of 18 pixels or larger, and use REM or M or whatever to get it into tech, they still won't know why it's the right thing to do. So, and like I said, your why may differ from their why. And this is where we get to another point, because I know when you are leading design and development teams, and you have to talk to marketing, there is this whole hierarchy. There is a manager over your head and another one, or if you're a freelancer, you have a customer who has a manager who has, there's always someone up there trying to call the shots and trying to get you into doing what they think is right. And when they have no clue what it means to make a site accessible, or if their only motivation is like, yeah, it's for legal reasons, they're not going to get it right. Okay, you know that, but your team doesn't know the why of that. Not really. The only time I believe you learn the why of something is if you get to relate, if you get to experience. So I think it's important that you find out what the people in your team do understand and what they do not understand, and then project that. Because you may be dealing with different age groups, very young developers and designers, to people of my age who've always been used to doing things a certain way. Both these groups get very insecure when you just tell them what to do and you keep telling them what they did is wrong. So, yeah. So, how can you prevent arguments from people? Take what they know. Make them relate. And I could have gotten you a list, you know, of apps and tools and whatever you can use, filters in Chrome to see what, to show what things look like for someone who's colorblind. You can show what something looks like when they are very sensitive to light. You can, I could have sent you a list of links to how do you get to keyboard test something, or how do you, but you already know that because I'm talking to you, the ones who have to deal with the arguments, not the ones who are still learning. Okay. Now, we have something in Dutch where we say, oh, this is way too far from my bed. I don't know what the English equivalent of it is, but it's like, it's not my world. So I don't know. It's not important to me. Make it come close to home. I had a meeting a while back with a team who want to recreate some sort of scoring system online. And the first thing I asked them is, how many of you wear glasses or contacts? And in fact, all of them turned out to wear contacts or glasses. Well, the glasses were obvious, but the contacts were not. So, bam, that's where you have them. Ask people, can you see or read anything if you take out these contacts? Because the people you get these arguments from, the people that want to debate with you whether why you shouldn't do anything to make something accessible, or what, want to know why it's important. They're usually the people who do not have to deal with being disabled, being old, being so tired that everything is glaring. You know, this, you know, this feeling, you come home and you want to turn down the lights because everything is just going, right? So this is why I keep saying, relate to something that they know and then make it bigger. So ask them if they wear glasses. Ask them about hearing. You will be surprised if you have people, if people trust you, and they should be able to trust you. I mean, if you're a good manager and team lead, people trust you, right? Ask them if they are able to have a good conversation with someone when there is a lot of noise in the background. I live in Germany. One of the things that absolutely drives me bonkers around here is if you watch something on TV and they're not subtitling things, they're dubbing things. And then they have the original language in the background and the German in the foreground. And I have to turn off the channel because I cannot listen to it. Now, you will find if you ask people that, like, can you have a good conversation in a discotheque? Or how do you feel if five people at the same time try and talk to you and you have to form a decision about something? How do you feel? I'd be really surprised if people then tell you, oh, yeah, it's very easy. I can do it like that. No problem. I can focus like a madman. I never heard anyone say it. If they can relate to that, they can relate, or you can make them relate to the fact that if you design a website that has a ton of moving elements, that this actually gives the same feeling as a ton of people talking through each other's, I don't know how you say this in English, I'm sorry, when they just keep interrupting each other. It's the same effect. So relate, relate, relate. Fatigue, something else, if they're like, keep saying, no, I don't have all these problems, I'm Superman or Superwoman or super them. Take the horrible plastic packaging, you know, this stuff where you want to buy a USB stick and it's into plastic so tough that you actually need a concrete cutter to open it. If you start talking about that, they're like, yeah, I know, I bought this or I bought that. They can relate. Relate that back to something, to a website or an app that is inaccessible. I don't have to give you those examples of inaccessibility because you already know them. It's up to you to teach the others. Or the example of the shop with no labels. Just ask them, can you imagine going into a supermarket and all you see is the price, but the labels are white? People go like, you're talking nonsense. That would never happen. And you can explain to them, of course it happens. It happens on the web. It happens in a web shop where you can't read the description, or where someone using assistive technology like a screen reader doesn't get these descriptions read. Okay, so this is where you start. You pique interest. You relate. Okay? And then there is what they think they know. But you are the one who knows what can go wrong. They don't. So make them experience that by themselves, because you don't want to counter arguments. You want to prevent them. A good thing is make people find a web shop. I prefer to take web shops for several reasons. Because a web shop has even more reason, if you take it from a capitalistic greedy way, to be accessible than a regular site. I mean, every site should be accessible, but a web shop actually loses money. Okay, if you cannot navigate a web shop by keyboard, you as a site owner, you lose money. So, and there are shops that make a lot of profit, more than usual, because they are accessible. This is just the regular market. Either what you offer is great and your experience is great, or it's not. Okay. But a lot of people in your team who are new to accessibility, who are questioning of the why, they have to experience that. So my challenge and my homework for you would be find shops and sites that suck where it comes to accessibility, and find those that are great. Okay. And then take half a day or a day off with your team. Tell your boss or whoever is paying for the job that that day off is part of the process. Okay. And that day, you're going to workshop your people like crazy. Make your team shop by keyboard. It's not fair to make them shop with a screen reader the first time, because learning how to use a screen reader, man, I'm still at it. If you want to see how people experience the world when they use a screen reader, if you want to show that, ask someone who uses a screen reader on a daily basis. Invest in that. Invest in it. Really, do not save money in the process of learning how to make a site accessible. Okay. Now, people will start feeling dumb, right? When you bring up accessibility, and they start to learn that they don't, that, or how should I say it? they start to realize that there is a lot of stuff that they don't know. And it's going to make them very insecure. It can make them so insecure that they start to question everything, which isn't right, because you work with that designer because that's a great designer, and you work with that developer because that is a great developer. Okay, so make sure you keep that on top of everything. You keep them aware that you know that they are good at what they're doing as far as they were doing it, but that it's time to learn new stuff. Okay, so when you take them through this process of testing a website and take out the whole bag of tools that you have, the ones I was talking about, these simulators in Chrome, there are apps on your phone for that. Make them experience the world through the eyes and the ears of someone who has a disability. There's a great tool called Polyping. That tool can even show you how dyslexia, what it looks like, you know, and still realize that all these tools are only showing you a little bit. It's not the real thing. But when you do this with your team, make them run into the wall. Make them shop by keyboard on a completely inaccessible website. A developer will start inspecting the source code. I've seen developers go like, "Oh, I do that too. I didn't know that." The moment this happened, they're not going to bitch at you. Why should I make it like that? They experienced it. Okay. And the same is with design. Make them see the world through the eyes of people with visual disabilities and make it clear that this also concerns their grandparents and at some point themselves. It's the same, something that I learned. I mean, I was blown away when I heard that. When people can't hear, the way they experience text, the way they read text is different. So if you know what can go wrong with accessibility, you can cook up any kind of example to make the people you work with experience at least part of it. And then you challenge them in all their talent and all their skills to go figure out how that could have been better. Okay. And find great metaphors, find stuff that people understand. And this is where I warned you, this is where it gets rough. I mean, I have given examples of people who went to a restaurant and ate something bad, and suddenly they had to go to the bathroom, you know, like, but they couldn't find the bathroom because they are in this big building with a lot of halls and the signage sucks. Do you know what a disgrace that is? How humiliating that is if you have to do it in your pants because someone in that building didn't make the right signage? Now, imagine it's not you having to go to the bathroom, but it's you having to pay the tax office. I mean, in Europe, in every country, it's different. And it's a catastrophe everywhere. They're working on it and working on it and working on it. It's still a catastrophe. Okay. And imagine, you know, I have to get this done. I have to tell the tax office I made this much money or I didn't make this much money. If I cannot file those papers or those numbers, I'm going to get a fine. Can you imagine the fear and the pressure? If you cannot operate that website because you cannot operate a mouse or because your screen reader isn't working or simply because you are overwhelmed by all the colors and the buttons and the whatchamacallit, can you imagine? That really sucks. I actually don't have to tell you that because you know that. But this is what you should tell the people you work with the ones who are trying to bring arguments to you against accessibility. And accessibility is not only for the disabled. Accessibility is for everybody. And it's up to you to bring that. This is how you counter arguments. Okay? And then, again, show them their power. Actually, the web designers and developers, they are the kings and the queens and the magicians on the web. Acknowledge that. If someone has been doing the thing that is his job in the same way, using this very lousy framework that only use divs, you know, this developer probably doesn't know that he's not doing something right, because especially the younger generation is not getting educated right. This is something that has to change. Okay. But they are still the kings, the queens, and the magicians, because they have the power to do better. When they see that if they, for example, take a form, okay, there's always a lot of discussions about forms. Labels are ugly. I want that checkbox to have a different shape or whatever. And you make them discover that with that, they make a form unusable to a lot of people, and you show them how they can make it usable, and you challenge them to and do a great design and use labels and do everything great under the hood, they'll feel good about themselves. I know I feel good about myself. And I mean, I'm not even a hardcore developer. I know just about enough about development to be really dangerous and do really stupid things. Anyway, they have the power to change things for the better. So please make them and keep them aware of that. Show them that they can take great pride in their work on a human level, on a creative level, on a commercial and financial level. I mean, okay, let's take the rank up a little bit, right? You are the design and development team lead, and you have to discuss with the company CTO. Okay. For those who think, what's a CTO? Because I know we have this crazy habit to use acronyms for everything all the time. A CTO is a chief technical officer. Okay. This CTO is getting hammered from the top, like, okay, we have to do this. We have to realize this. It shouldn't cost this much. Get it fixed, get it done. We're getting fined, or we're getting whatever, or we're not making enough turnover because our site is not accessible or whatever. Okay. They will want to defend their post because they are responsible for budget, but they also need to get it done. Those are people you can also get arguments from. Those are difficult people to talk to because they're like me. Most of them know just enough to be really dangerous, okay? Where it comes to code stuff, design stuff, technical stuff. And on the other hand, it's not that hard. If a CTO comes down on your head and says, listen, this just needs to happen, and this thing has to go online, and we have to make turnover with this, you can get angry. You can go into not, don't, do not, and say, okay, so who's going to tell the boss that he's losing out on turnover, you and me? Instead of saying that, just say, don't you want to be able to tell the boss that we're going to do a lot more turnover if we do it right from the start? It's a whole different tone of voice. Okay. So again, show them they can take great pride in their work on a human level, on a creative level, and also on a commercial and a financial level. Okay. And then there is translation and teamwork. Web designers and developers, they do not always speak the same language. I don't mean it disgraceful, because I actually have a domain name called Geek on Heels. I would call developers do geek speak. Okay. Now, things can get very literal, especially for developers. I've been part of a development team, an open source development team, where I would follow the discussions between the designers, the marketers, and the developers, and they would go Babylonic on each other like that. Bam. Okay. And they were fighting. I have heard people screaming on the floor. It's very discomforting, actually. But it's up to you to bring them together, because if you bring them together and you too are part of that team, you get this we situation. We can, we will. And it takes a basic understanding of each other's work. Okay. So some people roll into design, but they actually don't think in grids. But there's a reason why it's really good to think in grids, because if something is in a grid design, it's easier to code and to unify coding. You, with development experience, you know that. But a designer maybe doesn't know that. Or the designer has been hit on by their customer who said, oh, I want to have this really flipped out design, and I'm the one paying the money. I'm paying so much money. You have to do everything I say. Okay. This can potentially divide your team. Don't let it. Keep the people you work with and the teams you depend on. Keep them together. And I have this story. It's on my website. So I'm going to look the other way because I have it there on my screen that has, that has a lot of meaning to me when I try to explain this to others. I call it the story of the $160 button. Because if you're creating stuff for the web, it's not, on one hand, a designer should be able to stick to the design and the developer should be able to stick to the development. But if you do not have this general understanding of how the whole process works, if nobody ever shows you, you're missing out on a lot of information. And this is also very expensive. And how do I say it? Small changes happen through love. Big changes happen through greed and capitalism. Okay. And this may be like a strange turn, but this is where I get to the turn where if you are working with people who keep countering or who keep arguing with you over accessibility, maybe that team needs more education. Maybe there needs money to be invested in educating the team. And it doesn't matter whether you are a freelancer or if you are working for whatchamacallit big agency. It costs money. Debate, discussions, fights, negativity. It all costs directly, but mostly indirectly. So semantics is the holy grail to me. Okay, in code. Anyone developing accessible sites and apps knows that. All right. But then there is also terminology. And this is where we get to language. Okay. So the conversation I'm describing there is a marketer coming to a developer and saying, hey, you need to change that menu item as soon as you can. It has to be twice as big and it has to be green. And the developer is like, what menu item? Well, the third one. I don't see a menu item. Of course you do. You made it. Nah, I never made menu items. Man, I mailed you a screenshot and a detailed explanation this morning. Oh, that. Yeah, I studied that for a while. It was a lot of text. That's a button with a pop-up. It's not a menu item. That's not for me to change just like that. You have to talk to the design department. I would have mailed you that answer this afternoon. I answer my email only twice a day. Good for him or her. Okay. But that conversation was very expensive. At first sight, that button cost 55 euros. Okay. Because the developer who charges, he charges 110 per hour. Dutifully locked that as out of scope. And so half an hour of that time was 55 euros. But in fact, that button cost 160 euros. How? This is where it comes to translating and mutual understanding. You have to understand or teach your people that they are part of a larger process, not just what they do. They should focus on what they do, but they have to understand that they are part of that process. That marketer that is not even an integrated part of the team, but someone who has influence from the outside, wasted hours. Okay. I don't know what it costs in other countries, but I've been a recruiter for 8 years and I know what it would have cost in the Netherlands, right? So, and I am calculating that in salary in this article. And this is how I end up thinking this button cost $160. For that $160 or euros, you could have had half an afternoon, have someone who lives being disabled, someone who is blind or someone who is deaf or anything you want to have shown to you to see what it's like if they operate a website or an app. You could have invited this person over and paid him or her for that time. Because that too is very important when you get arguments. Teach your team who they are working for, who they are working with. Okay. I stated here in this list, what if that button actually cost $20,000 or 20,000 euros? These days, the difference is not that big. Well, if that button is not working because it's a faulty checkout, then a lot of people couldn't order and pay for what they wanted to buy. So then a lousy button is easily $20,000 in damages or even more. I mean, I leave it up to your imagination how big you want to make this example. Most important, you are part of a team. If you work for a company or in a company, never forget, they are paying your bills. They are paying your salary. They're paying your fee. And you would think, okay, we have to be nice to them and say, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. We'll do anything you want. But you know, if you're into accessibility, that you carry this responsibility to help them make the right decision. And that starts with your own teams. You do it together. Never forget that. So I see it's 6 o'clock here in the evening. I've been yapping here for an hour. So I think it's time to bring on the arguments. And I will start. And then I'm going to ask you and ask Amber to moderate that to if you have questions or if you have arguments that you don't think you can answer based on what I've been telling you here today. So one of the meanest I get is, oh, in design, when I say, no, you can't use that color on a white background because the contrast is lousy. Well, then they go like, This is how they always use their corporate collars, or this is how we always use our corporate collars. I mean, it can also happen to you that you as a development team have to work with a marketing agency that goes Hulk on you over what you're saying, right? How do you counter that? You do the same thing. Show them what it's like for someone with lower vision. Show them what it's like for someone who's colorblind. Show them that green and orange look the same when people have red-green colorblindness, for example. Again, you should know all these examples because you are into accessibility. You know why it's important. And if you need ways to learn how to give examples, come find me. Okay? The next one, the design. Labels are ugly. Okay. Well, create a form for them that has no labels. Okay. And then have them run a screen reader. Because using a screen reader for something as basic as a form is something you can do, whether you do it on Windows or on Mac or whatever. It's one of the simpler things of a screen reader. Operating a screen reader is a whole world in itself, but that you can do. So if people say labels are ugly and you say, but they need to be in there and they finally understand they can be in there, challenge the designer to create a whole new form. Make sure they are not afraid to bring on new designs because accessibility, it's a verb. It's not just a phrase. It's a verb. It's something you do. Okay. And then there's another one. Developers. Yeah, we will develop those features first and then we will make it accessible afterwards. Okay. This is where I always look. Who am I dealing with here? Am I dealing with the CTO? Am I dealing with the development team itself? Is there anyone here who I can make understand that it's actually very costly what they're doing there? This is what gives accessibility a bad rap, right? Because they're baking cookies and then expect they can put in the sugar and the salt after they've been baked. Okay. This is that one of those arguments where I will counter with, okay, so wouldn't you want to tell our boss or our client that they can make a lot more money when they do it in an accessible way? Because also for the client or your boss, don't do cannot, can't. Don't use fear, use positive things. Okay. So my throat is raw and I think it's your turn.
That was really great, Anne. Thank you. I saw tons of really good feedback coming in the chat. Someone did post, so we don't have any questions yet. If anyone has questions for Anne, feel free to add them in the Q&A widget and I can share them with her. Of course, she's also interested in hearing other arguments that you've come up against, especially if there's any that you're not sure how to respond to, we'd be happy to discuss those. So one person did say three arguments that they've heard is the first one was blind users can visit one of our offices to get help signing the forms instead of doing it on the web, right? So they have to come to an office. Okay. The second one was we don't have time to make this accessible now. We can do later, which I know you've already addressed. Mm-hmm. And then three was just, they just say, this is better design. Like, it's just better. So I don't know if you have any thoughts about those. Maybe we start with the first one. Blind people can just come to the office instead of using the website.
Oh, that one. I love that one. Yeah. Okay. Imagine this is your bloody tax return. Imagine you are like me. You suck at administration. And you're always on the last rank. And I mean, especially if someone is blind, doing the administration is probably a lot harder. So It's been hard. It's been hard. And then you realize it's your last day. But let's say it's you. It's you. You're not the blind person. It's you. You have not been able to do your administration in a timely manner for whatever reason. Okay. And then you cannot do it on the website. You cannot do it online. Instead, you get this message saying, come to our office on Monday. And you know it's Friday. And if you don't put that in by Friday, you're going to find something else in your inbox, right? Saying, you're late, you're fined. Do you still think you can request that from people? Or do you think you can, or say, imagine it's like, again, that's the story of the food. Man, you have to go to the bathroom so bad. And someone says, no, you can't use this bathroom. You know, use the bathroom on the other side of town. Yeah. How would that make you feel?
Yeah, I think drawing those, I think too, on that kind of argument, the going into the office, and we'll talk a minute on the side note on that of Josh said in chat, they can just call in for help. But I do want to say something about going into the office that I think many people, like, it might seem easy for a typically able, wealthy person that owns a vehicle to go to an office. And, you know, you can take time off work. You can drive yourself there and you can do it during the time that the office is open. But someone who doesn't have their own vehicle, who doesn't have freedom, and whether or not they're an abled person or not, freedom to take time off their job during the hours in which the office is open, or someone who is unable to drive themselves and they have to rely on someone else to drive them or public transportation, which may or may not work. And I think once you start saying those kinds of things, like then they click, it's like, oh, this could also be an extra cost for them. Now they have to pay an Uber because they don't have a family member who, or a friend who's willing to drive them. And so now you're adding a cost. Like, I think when you start spelling that kind of stuff out, it's helpful to like emphasize why like coming in person, just, it doesn't really work. And yeah. I mean, is the office even open 24 hours a day? Like, what if someone works the night shifts? Like, it'd be convenient for them to come in at 1 a.m. Does that work for you? Would you like to come in and serve them in your office at 1 a.m.? So, I mean, we always talk too about cutting costs and like allowing people to self-serve on the web reduces the staffing requirements. Like, even the number of people available to do tech support. I mean, that's why every time we have a tech support question, it's like, have you read the documentation, right? Like, because like before you can chat with them or before you can submit your support ticket, because it requires man hours, which costs the business money to respond to support. Yeah. So wouldn't it be better if things just worked and then you didn't have to have a human being helping people?
But you see, but this is
horrible.
This
we don't want to be human helping people. But yeah, at the same but time.
This is what I'm talking about. This is painting the big picture. This is showing people you are part of a bigger picture. And I can't help but seeing Glenn Worker saying something wonderful. He says, if a developer finds out that the way they're coding something is preventing someone from using the website, they're typically very motivated to fix it. Yeah. A lot of developers
really about
are
just explaining it, right? And making it more visible.
Yeah.
Yeah. On the phone front, I think it's the same scenario, right? Cost of people answering the phone, but also the big thing here in the US was the Domino's case, and Domino's tried to be like, well, they can just call to order pizza, but they were constantly putting people on hold, or, you know, maybe they're not open all the time and you want to order in advance. So I don't know if Lainey is still here, but I know Lainey Feingold, when she spoke about laws and that kind of stuff, she said that almost never is a phone considered a reasonable alternative to having an accessible website.
No, it's not. And actually, interesting about forms, you know, they're like in Europe, we have this thing with GDPR. And one of the arguments I got was from a designer and a developer. They teamed up on me and they said, no, we're not going to design in a form into this. Absolutely not. Well, people hate forms. We're not going to do forms. And then I said, yeah, but What if someone can't use the phone? What if someone is shy to use the phone? What about that? And if you do that, you make people feel very unloved, like they don't care enough about us to give us a forum. They just expect us to call in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's about giving people multiple options. Like a phone is good for some people, but for other people, it's not. Lainey is here because I just saw she asked a question.
Oh, cool.
So how useful do you think friendly competition is? So can you find the most accessible sites in the sector? So maybe even their competitors, and remind the team that they want to be leaders, role models, ahead of the pack instead of behind. Do you think that's helpful?
Very, very helpful. Just remember, do it from the positive side, because the competition is of course you want to be the best, but you want to be the best for your customer, not because you want to be the best company doing something. It's very easy to poo on other people's heads. I call it PP marketing. Yeah. So yeah, that absolutely is great.
Let's see. Someone else asked, how can the value of accessibility be emphasized at a company with a low UX, so user experience maturity, where UX is not valued and is simply viewed as, quote, making it pretty?
That's a good one. So are you saying a low UX is like, it doesn't really matter if the website works? How should I interpret that? What kind of customers would they have? Do they expect conversion on their website?
Mm-hmm.
What is conversion? Yeah. This is the first thing you have to define. And someone here says UX is different from UI. This is a whole other discussion, really. But if your UI sucks, your UX sucks even bigger. It's just,
can we define UI for people who aren't familiar?
UI is a user interface. It's how you actually navigate an app or a site. Okay, if the navigation sucks, forget your user experience. So, and again, I actually like that question about the importance of the interface or not, because it's really hard to measure. Okay, a screen reader is not a browser, so you cannot measure screen readers. This is very important. Most people don't realize it. I think it's one of the first things you have to explain to your team. But you can explain it in another way. It's another example I have on my website. I think Paolo can probably find it. This is about contrast. It's like this bad smell in a store, right? You jumping off or walking out of a store or jumping off a website is very often a very unconscious process. Or let's take a restaurant, because I got this on the site. You can read it. Let's do the restaurant. You go to this restaurant and the menu is really fancy and the chairs suck, right? Chances are you're not coming back. Maybe you don't even remember that the chair sucked. Or even worse, they have a problem with the sewer, you know, and there is this smell. It's always there. It's like, it's not so bad that you want to run off, but you're not going to come back. I can tell you that. If someone proposes the same restaurant to you, you're going to go, nah, maybe we'll take another one. And 9 out of 10 times, you won't even remember why you're saying that. Okay? This happens to websites. So how important is conversion to you? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Joshua is saying something that I find very interesting. Auto-fix contrast issues. I don't think you can automate contrast issues. So
browsers will be able to auto-fix contrast issues with the new CSS update coming out. I don't know much about this, to be honest. So I would have
What I know about contrast is in my naivety in the beginning, I created my website
And I thought, I want to take the best contrast in the world. I want to do white text on black background. That is 10 times A. And someone said, man, that really sucks. It glares.
Too much contrast.
Yeah, it's too much contrast. Yeah. So I worry about that. But yeah, contrast can be personal, like Liz says. I'm wondering if there is more arguments. People, do you have arguments that you need a good counter argument for?
Yeah, if anyone has those, feel free to put them in. Deneb asked, what's a good tool in Chrome or otherwise to simulate various forms of color blindness that so then they could take a screenshot and illustrate for the brand why it's not working? So one that I've used is Colorblindly, which is a Chrome extension. It might have a Firefox version too.
Chrome has it built in, actually.
Chrome has colorblind simulation built in.
Yes, but it's incredibly stinky to find. Would you like me to show you?
Yeah, share your screen. Show us how to do that.
Okay. Hang on. Here we go.
Greg says it's buried in the dev tools.
It's buried.
Meetups because yeah. I swear I learned something every time. Chrome is generally the browser that I use for work. I had no idea.
Yeah. Okay. Let's first get an image here that is a lot more work, has more color. Okay.
Okay. So we have a mountain with a blue sky and green background.
If it's an image pop-up, it's not good. I should be able to refresh this. Oh, this one's really nice to show. Okay. So you go to your dev tools. Can you see that? Does it open for you?
Yes, we can see it.
Okay.
No, we can see that you open. We can't see dev tools. Do you have dev tools?
You don't see dev tools. Hang on. Oh, here.
Yes, now there we go. See dev tools.
I hate to do this because I always have to search and search and search and search to remember where it was. It is here at this terrible user interface. These three dots next to the cogwheel on the top right.
Okay.
And then you scroll down to more tools. And then you go down. And then you go to rendering. And then you see in very small, unreadable fonts, which I have trouble enlarging. Ah, here we go. You can render all kinds of things. Okay, emulate a focus page, enable automatic dark mode, media types, vision deficiencies, bird vision. Oh, this is my daily life.
Yeah, mine too, if I don't have my contacts in.
Okay.
So
colorblind.
Turned on, yeah, Protopania. I don't know how to pronounce all these, but very forms. I had no idea this was here.
I think it's not it hasn't been there very long. Yeah.
That's super cool.
So I
wonder if this is in all Chromium browsers. So it might be in Firefox too, because they use kind of the same underlying stuff.
Probably. Let me check.
I think. I might have just said something dumb. Firefox might not be a Chromium-based browser. Yep, there we go. Someone corrected me. I was like, I said it, and then I was like, wait a minute. I don't actually think that's right.
No, I can't find it that fast, but that is because I have the weirdest form of dyslexia, and if a screen has a certain way of ordering information, I'm gone. I'm out the window. I can't. So anyway, so would people like to see it again once more now that I have enlarged this thing?
I think we saw it. Okay.
So, okay.
Yeah, that worked out.
All right.
Cool.
More questions?
Thank you. Let's see. Joshua said, I wish randomized IDs were more used for user entering forms like Twitter and applied to all the emoji / sharing elements that surround it. When multiple tweets are shown, how do you know which one you're liking? I'm guessing maybe in Twitter, they might have ambiguous. I don't know. I haven't gone through Twitter with a screen reader, but maybe they're ambiguous. So I don't know.
I think if he's still here, I cannot write in the chat for some reason. I can only write to hosts and panelists. I don't know. Lazar, are you still here?
I can look and see if Lazar is still here. I don't see Lazar. No, he's dropped out.
Oh, he dropped out. Because Lazar told me he had to install a special app to use Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Where are the questions? You can pick my brain. This is your chance, people. I'll give you the worst metaphors in the world.
So do you feel like metaphors are really probably one of the best ways, just sort of circling back to what you were saying, like as far as creating arguments, that's being able to draw parallels in that way is what works the best.
Yeah. Yes. Because that makes you able to relate.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes in all kinds of directions. I mean, I work with quite a few blind people.
Mm-hmm.
Something a lot of people don't realize about being blind, actually, is that it's not so common that people don't see anything at all, that the world is just dark.
Yeah, they might be able to detect lights and things like that.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes I have to explain to someone who is like, I know this is wording stuff, but let's say someone is legally blind. Okay. Now, what a lot of designers, for example, and developers neither realize is that someone who can't see very well because he's diabetic because he has macular degeneration and he or she sees a big black spot or blotch, is going to enlarge the screen. And one of my friends enlarges to 300, almost 400%.
Mm-hmm.
And then you suddenly, on a big screen, you have the mobile view. And this is something very few people realize. And this is a great thing because this is something you can show. You can actually really... Mm-hmm. paste something round in the middle of the screen and make them navigate around a 200 to 400% enlarged screen. Yeah. And I think once you understand that, you are becoming more conscious. This is why I always say what I'm telling people is very infectious. When I go to a meeting, when I go on stage, one of the first things I say is, you cannot unforget what mm-hmm. I'm telling.
Yeah, we do a lot of user testing for clients and we'll always allow them to join. We usually have them in a webinar setting so they can't.
Oh, that's great.
Right. But I feel like once they've come and they've been able to watch a real user on their website, like it's one thing to like show them, I think do the metaphors and all that I think is really good. Mm-hmm. And then that's a way to like move them into being open to paying for user testing.
Yeah.
Right. But like, I feel like once they actually see what it's like for a real person and they can put like a face and the name on it. And the same thing for designers and developers. I know Alex Stein and I did a workshop at WordCamp US and a bunch of people were coming up afterwards and they were just blown away. I mean, they're all web professionals that are at WordCamp US and they were blown away because they had never seen anyone with a screen reader go on a website and they were just like, wow, now I'm thinking twice about everything I've done when I build my websites or my plugins or my themes or whatever that might be. So, But yeah, I think it does make a difference for designers and developers. And I know one thing, like having them watch, even if it's recorded talks or attending meetup or like AxeCon, which I know people are on the fence about AxeCon, but like AxeCon is free and it has multiple tracks like for designers and developers and they have users who come there. Like even if you can't have a custom user testing session for your team, having your team attend stuff like that, I think is really helpful. Just to expose them. So, yeah. So we're at 11:32. I haven't seen any more question. Oh, wait, I'm lying. I minimized the thing. Let's see what we can get through really fast in our last like 5 minutes or so. So Richard said, quote, "I know we asked for an accessible website, but we want it to look like this because we think it looks better." Is it something that he hears?
I've got one on my plate right now.
You know what I do? I think this goes back to Lainey's like finding other websites in their industry. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I'll even find like bigger brand. Like if you go to something like apple.com or whatever, right? Like I'm like, you think they don't know about conversion optimization? There's not a million things moving all over that webpage.
Yeah.
So
that is a very good one, because that is taking it from the positive side. The one that I have on my plate right now, I have this argument actually, and I killed it, because they said, yeah, well, we've always had this design like that and it has to be that way, but they actually had a lawsuit. So I'm like, okay, so do you want to be compliant or do you want to caress your designer and tell him how great he is? Because right now what you're saying to me is, I hate discrimination and Africans.
Yeah.
And that is so rude. That is incredibly rude. But that one hit home.
Yeah. When they heard you say that, they were like, wait a minute.
Yeah. That is like,
rude. Yeah.
And this is where I mean, it's sometimes you have to, sometimes there is no way to say it nicely, but the methodology to get their competition and say, look, they're doing better. I mean, I don't know what it's like in the US, but here in Europe, insurance companies, I can't believe it. One of my friends is terminally ill. He is looking to change his insurance company and draw up his last will and all of that stuff. And he has a lot of money and he cannot navigate their websites. So there's already been six insurance companies that missed out on a very lucrative customer simply because you can't navigate their website by keyboard.
Yeah. Tanika asked, when working on web accessibility, how do you define and measure success as you complete each project?
Ah, that's a nice one. I think that's one to chop up. When is the project at an end? Is that when you do the user testing? Is that when your tests go through, where they're automated testing that it only covers like 30%? Still a lot, but only 30%. When is the end of a project? How successful was it? Do you get to work with the SEO guys? Do you get to work with the girls or with the team? Do they share with you, hey, we have higher conversion on this, or this article is converting better because we have descriptive links, or we suddenly see a raise in this or that? When do you start measuring that?
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it is accessible is a success in itself.
Yeah. So, I mean, we always tell people, I mean, first of all, we're not lawyers, so we never tell people that something is legally compliant, but we measure against WCAG, Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, because I'm like, this is something we can measure against that is written out. But yeah, I think you really have to define what it is. I mean, I think we consider success to be no obvious WCAG failures on anything that we have built or assembled. Now, there's content that gets imported in.
Yeah.
If we didn't look at it, I can't say anything about it, right? Yeah. And I think that's something you have to be careful about. Like, I don't know if you're ever guaranteeing the accessibility of an entire website if it's a very large website that you've imported old things with
tech. Absolutely not.
But I mean, I think we like to think of success too as for people who came to us because they're interested, but they're not really sold. Like, knowing that, hey, we've created advocates, we've trained them so that they'll know how to maintain this moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And what to look for as they're building out their content. Like, I think that's a big marker of success too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. We have about 8 more minutes. So I'm going to try and get through because we got a bunch all of a sudden at the end here. So this is going to be your lightning round. Someone said, do you have any advice for having conversations with external organizations or clients versus people on your team specifically? If the accessibility moves you're encouraging are in conflict with their company culture or out of the job description of your contract there?
We could do an entire meetup on that topic. Really, it is a very, very good question. The advice to these external organizations or clients is you ask them, what is your goal? What do you want to reach? Where do you want to be with your company in 3 or 4 years? Do you want to have more clients, more conversion, more of this or that? And of course, the answer is going to be yes. And then you can explain to them like, okay, but you can't bake the cake and eat it too. So this is what it is going to take. And then you take the possibility route. And this is why I call myself a possibility advocate, not just an accessibility advocate. Kill the bears on the road. Give them the possibilities. And again, like the suggestion of compare them to the competition who's doing better or worse, or I think that would be a good thing. And you know, if something is out of the job description of your contact there, I think that is up to you whether you want to pursue and go higher up or talk to this person. Like, do you think I should talk to someone in a higher zone in your company? Do you think it's important enough? Because then they don't risk their job, and you just write them a message or contact them and talk to them about this, because no is the answer you already have.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think one thing too on that job description thing is one of the things we worked on doing was positioning ourselves as like accessibility is something we really care about. And so even some of our older clients in the beginning, like, we're maintaining stuff we built for them before we were super accessibility focused, but we kind of like worked on communicating that so they would know that when they come back to us, right? Or they're like, okay, you've been maintaining, just doing updates, and now we want you to rebuild or add this new landing page, that they wouldn't be surprised when we started like talking to them about accessibility. Right. But I think it's a little bit of a positioning. So if you know, you're a developer, and just in the very beginning, when you're bringing on a new client and having those contracts, you know, conversations, or it's a job and you're applying for a job, like saying in the interview, you know, I really care about accessibility, so that later on down the road, if you can be like, hey, I know this isn't like part of what you want me to do, but I noticed this, so I'm just flagging it for you. Like, they won't be surprised because you will have laid the foundation of like, I am someone who cares about accessibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Isaac asks, or said, creating accessible apps and sites are worth it. Can you share experiences on how agencies can convince clients to invest in accessibility for apps or sites? Because implementing accessibility translates into man hours paid in development. I know, again, another very big question in the last couple minutes.
This is a big question. And it also depends on if the customer asks you to repair something that can't be fixed, or if they want you to start from scratch. And I think there you will have to take broader arguments. I mean, let's do the scare tactics here. Not the US ones, but in Europe. In Europe, June 28, 2025 is D-Day. You know that? Web shops have to be accessible. And then people say, haha, yeah, but not the small ones. Yeah, the small ones too, when they decide to add a new product to their store from that day on. So, and then it's going to be a fear argument at first, where you say, okay, you know, you have to be accessible. It's by law, and people can actually fine you. In Germany, this is happening with other stuff, but this is the scare tactic. And then take the scare tactic off the table.
just like that and say, listen, hey, if you do it now, if you do a relaunch of your app or of your site, and you do what we call the shift left movement, so you draw in an accessibility consultant right from the start, before you even start writing your ideas on paper, you're going to know that the cost for developing something that is accessible is not that much higher. And in fact, if people would just learn to use semantic HTML and accessible code in a couple of years, it won't cost anything extra because it's just part of the job. Yeah.
Yeah.
Liz wants colorful Dutch expressions for ugly visual designs.
Just for fun. And I think that can be our last question. So are there any colorful Dutch expressions for ugly visual design?
No, right now there's not a Dutch one that comes to my mind, but one of the funniest expressions to me ever was a dear customer I had from the US, and she said, "Oh, and have you seen that? That is just so fugly."
Fugly. But fugly. Yes, that is a word that people in the US say.
Yeah. And that was new to me. So that was hilarious to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you everyone who came and hung out with us until the very end. We very much appreciate it. Thank you again. And if anyone wants to reach out to you, what's the best place to follow up?
Oh, if you want it to be quick, find me in a DM on Twitter. Just follow me on Twitter and mention me if you can't DM me because I'm not following you. I always forget how that works. The way not to do it is to use LinkedIn. I suck at LinkedIn.
Yeah, so, if someone contacts me on LinkedIn, I'll probably see it in about 5 months.
Exactly. Same here. So, yeah, shoot me an email. Shoot me a LinkedIn. My new site is going up in a couple of weeks. And then you can also book an introductionary meeting with me through Calendly that I actually tested with keyboard. And that works. And my friend Lazar said it works. So if anyone has anything to say about the accessibility of Calendly, do it.
Oh, yeah. I have thoughts. I think one sub is better, but we don't have time. So if we did not get to your question, please join the Facebook group. That is the best way to follow up between meetups. I'll throw another link in the chat for that. And we will see you back here soon. We're going to do a little wave and smile here at the end, just because I need to not end the meeting until our transcript is done, in case anyone is relying on the transcript. So thank you so much, Anne, and thank you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizedigital.com.